no amount of data will make the decision for you. There should be something at stake worth caring about.
What we offer is access.
You can do a lot more on mobile devices than we ever could before.
I think that the devices have come a long way.
Almost two-thirds use applications beyond email and voice.
Is the mobile device a place where you can consume your intelligence information?
I mean, as much as I like gadgets, I only have so many pockets.
Hi there, and welcome to BI Radio. I'm Ken Seeley. On the show today, meetings and mobility. How to make your meetings more effective and how mobility makes us more productive. We talked to co-CEO of Research in Motion about the brave new world of business intelligence on the BlackBerry. And our own technology soup panel is back to look at why mobile devices are on the top of their buzz index. But first up, why a good meeting is like a good movie. Our own Kelsey Howarth talks to Patrick Lencioni about why meetings are important and how good ones can improve corporate performance and the four types of meetings that every company should have.
Hi, I'm Kelsey Howarth. Are your meetings good, bad, or downright deadly? Over the years, there's been no better source of inspiration on ways to transform a lifeless meeting into an engaging and profitable experience than Patrick Lencioni. Patrick is the author of 6 best-selling business books, an acclaimed public speaker, and the founder and president of The Table Group, a management consulting firm that focuses on organizational health. Today, you'll listen in as we discuss his bestseller, Death by Meeting. Death by Meeting. Loved the book. Wonderful. You state that bad meetings are the most painful problem in business. How does a company know if its meetings have become deadly?
Well, if they're boring, that's a good sign that they're problematic. If people dread going to them, that's a pretty good sign. I mean, those are the telltale signs. People should actually look forward to going to meetings, and they should not be bored when they're there. Now, that sounds crazy, I know, but the truth of the matter is good meetings are interesting, and more importantly, it's where real work gets done. And when people perceive meetings as something you do instead of work, that's a big problem.
Now, you have a theory that a good meeting is like a good movie. How so?
Well, it should get people's attention early on. A great movie hooks its audience early, in the first 10 minutes, and it should hold people's attention. There should be real conflict taking place. In other words, there should be something at stake worth caring about. And at the end, there should be some sort of resolution.
Now, encouraging conflict and drama in a meeting would seem like a hard sell. Don't most managers feel that it's their role to smooth conflict and limit the drama in meetings?
Exactly, which is why meetings are so boring. The truth is, meetings aren't supposed to be easy and comfortable. They're supposed to be places where difficult decisions are made. And if you take the drama out and the conflict out, you're not going to really be talking about the right things and really getting at the heart of the issues. And you're not going to engage people and get their best from them either. So you're absolutely right. That's what most managers think. And that's where they are mistaken.
Now, your fix for bad meetings is not less meetings, but actually more meetings of a different nature. Can you explain the 4 types of meetings you recommend?
Right. I like to say that most companies have one big meeting every week, and they wonder why it doesn't work. And I refer to that as meeting stew. They throw every potential ingredient that could go into a meeting into this one big staff meeting. And in fact, people need to be having multiple kinds of meetings with very different purposes, and with clearer contexts around why they're there. The 4 different kinds of meetings are, the first is administrative meetings, which are just really check-ins daily, like, hey, what's everybody doing today? No agenda, no problem solving, just basically social check-in with one another so people know what they're doing. The next kind of meeting is what is usually a weekly tactical meeting, which is just where people talk about how are we doing against our near-term goals? What's holding us back? And what kind of problems do we need to resolve so we can actually accomplish those goals? It's not about strategy. It's not about brainstorming. It's about solving practical problems that keep us from being where we need to get. The next kind of meeting is we call a strategic or a topical meeting. And this should happen whenever it's needed. And certainly if it's not happening at least once a month and it's not there, you're not doing enough of them. And this is where you actually take one topic, a big topic that is going to have an impact on your future, and you spend 2 hours or more focused on that one topic until you've wrestled it to the ground. These kind of meetings are actually very fun because they're focused on really solving a big problem, and these are where people have to debate and brainstorm and push on each other and draw on their levels of experience and perspective. So that's the third kind, the last kind of meeting that companies need to have, and this one I do believe needs to happen once every quarter, and that is there needs to be quarterly off-site reviews where you just step back from the business and breathe and kind of reassess where you stand in, as a team, as an executive team, as a strategic viability in terms of what your competitors are doing, what's going on in the market, what your best employees are doing, what your worst employees are doing. So it's stepping back and getting perspective, slowing down to go fast. So those are the four kind of meetings. Usually we talk about those things in a very mixed up way in a meeting, and people don't know, are we making a decision? Are we brainstorming? Is this a long-term issue, a short-term issue? And the answer is yes, it's all of those. And that's why we get so frustrated, because we have no context in our meeting.
We spoke with David Axon recently, who's the president of the Sonex Group, and he was saying that a fundamental mistake that organizations make in their yearly plans and budgets is too much detail, that strategic plans and budgets and items get lost amidst a host of expense line items that don't mean much in the grand scheme of things. Now, there's a place, I guess, in the tactical meetings that you recommend for this, but most companies try and jam a lot of these things into that same weekly meeting, correct?
Absolutely. What they try to do is they take on everything. I like to compare it to what we do at home, which doesn't work very well. We're standing in front of the bathroom mirror, brushing our teeth, standing next to our husband or wife, and we're trying to decide where to go on vacation, what to get for dinner that night, who's picking up the kids, whether one of our kids should go to a counselor, and whether we should have another baby, all in the same conversation. And the truth is, human beings cannot process on all those different levels in the same conversation. And why we think that's going to work at work is beyond me. You know, we need to be clearer about why we're having a meeting and what we're trying to get done there. And until we do that, people are going to be frustrated. Because it's not actually what they're talking about that they're unhappy with at meetings. It's the fact that they don't feel like they're getting anything done and it's wasting their time.
Now, one of the things I found interesting in your book, you talk about, you know, rather than always sending emails to people, to actually stroll over to them and go and have a normal conversation. Has technology distanced us from one another in terms of meetings as well?
Well, I think what it's done is it's made us feel like we have permission, or that we're able to accomplish the same things without being face to face. And while technology has done good things in terms of when we positively can't be face to face, it's helped us make those kind of interactions better. It still has not allowed us to make the kind of decisions we need to make or work together as a team as though we were in the same room. There's no substitute for being in the same room and for developing those kind of relationships.
I wonder about the death by PowerPoint as well in meetings when people put up.
Oh, gosh. It's PowerPoint and it's Microsoft Excel. It's all the details, the numbers. People need to be talking about ideas and concepts and decisions. And a spreadsheet or a PowerPoint presentation does not suffice. They can be helpful background, but most of the conversations people need to have are not about numbers. They're about ideas and principles and decisions that need to be made.
One of the things that our customers say time and again is the value of Cognos in meetings is that they can come into the meeting with an agreed on version of the truth, that they have metrics, they have scorecards, they have plans that they've all agreed on in advance, and they can move on to those deeper issues. Can you talk to the value of that at all?
Exactly. What it does is the decision science that and the data that Cognos brings to the table allows people to not spend their time wading through details, but it informs them about what's really going on so that they can have those difficult conversations where no amount of data will make the decision for you.
For more information on how your company can avoid death by meeting, please visit the Table Group website at tablegroup.com. To find out how to get Patrick to speak at your next event, please visit the Sweeney Agency at thesweeneyagency.com. Finally, to read more interviews with Patrick, please visit the Cognos Performance Perspectives newsletter on the Cognos.com homepage.
Got perspective? Cognos Performance Perspectives is the Cognos e-newsletter for business intelligence, enterprise planning, and performance management. It's your source for exclusive interviews, insights, and opinion on industry trends. It's a perspective unique to Cognos, one we think you'll enjoy. Get the newsletter and get a new perspective. Subscribe now at cognos.com/newsletter.
You're listening to BI Radio, brought to you by Cognos, the next level of performance. Check us out online at radiocognos.com.
Hi, I'm Don Campbell, Vice President, Platform Strategy and Technology.
And I'm Anastasia Valentine, Product Manager.
I'm Stefan Ju, Technical Architect.
And I'm Andrew Cowell, Product Manager.
So guys, we talk a lot about the technologies that exist in our space, in our industry. Everybody knows about databases and OLAP and all of those kind of things. But there are other technologies, some of them reaching a heightened energy around now. And we try to track them. We try and keep on top of them so that we understand where our customers might be going, where the industries might be going, where everyone is going in this space. And put them together in a thing we call the Buzz Index. Lots of things make the Buzz Index from quarter to quarter. Things like virtualization or the Web 2.0, things like that. I think it's a good way for us to keep on top of what's happening in the industry.
Yeah, the Buzz Index recently has shown mobile as something that's been talked about a lot in our industry, and mobile has been garnering a lot of attention in the BI space in particular, in the product performance management space.
So why is that? What's so new about mobile? Everyone's had cellular phones and had the ability to take their laptops and go different places with them and take information with them. What's so new and buzzy about mobility?
I think it's because more people are actually using mobile devices, and not just phones, because cellular phones have been around for quite some time, but actually using PDA type mobile devices where they have information with them, whether it be, you know, their to-do list, their email, their other applications, whether, you know, Google Maps, Google Earth. You can get all that in the mobile device. You can just have more information at your fingertips.
Do we think, too, that the iPhone had something to do with the buzz as well? Simply because for the longest time as much as I like gadgets, I only have so many pockets, and it would be really, really nice to be able to have an MP3 player, a digital camera if you need one, but PDA, cell phone, all of these things in a package that you know, it's a single package that, you know, not battery problems, you know, it's always connected and things of that nature. Do you think that's part of the buzziness, is the fact that people are starting to realize that you can do so much more with the device?
Yeah, for sure. Advances in the hardware around mobile have been part of it as well. We can do a lot more on mobile devices than we ever could before. Before, you're right, it was all about cell phones and that's it. Now all of a sudden people are looking at their cell phone and they realize, hey, it's a little computer. And couple that with the fact that more and more people are away from their desks, and all of a sudden you have an alternative way to process your information, not just the PC on your desktop.
And I think that the devices have come a long way, because if you think of all-in-one devices in general, outside of the mobile space, you're always compromising the quality of one aspect or all aspects of the all-in-one capabilities. With the new devices, these cameras are really good. They're not, 1-2 megapixel. The radio signals are really good. The capabilities, even some of the voice capabilities, are really good.
They have file systems, they have encryption built in. These are quite powerful devices now, much more powerful than even regular PCs of 3 or 4 years ago.
Well, and a transition point, I think, is the fact that you don't need to create custom applications specifically for the device in all cases. You can leverage the internet and what the, you know, web apps that exist out there, and the fact that you can now go to a web browser on one of these mobile devices and experience the same sort of web page that you would see if you were at your desktop.
To what degree do we think that there's going to be a convergence or conflict between laptops and mobile devices. So people who are sitting in Starbucks right now, are they going to be suddenly, you know, instead of going to a slate, they're just going to say, to heck with it, I'm going to go right to my mobile device? Or is the form factor still not going to work, or will it work in some cases?
I think that mobile devices are going to be more prevalent than your laptop computer. I mean, look at the Wi-Fi capabilities on those mobile devices. You can go to Starbucks and connect to the net. And that's just absolutely excellent in comparison to, you know, lugging your laptop around, making sure there's a power source and all of that. I mean, I would much rather grab my mobile device out of my purse and use that.
Yeah. I think they're both mobile devices, right? I'll probably always have a small handheld device. Yeah. But there's a time or there are certain sets of applications where I really need a keyboard, I really need the large screen, and then I'll put down my small cell phone and then move to a larger device. But what's great is nowadays that device doesn't have to be tethered to my desk. It can still be a full-fledged computer, but now it just happens to be mobile and it's got a cell connection or a Wi-Fi connection.
There are some companies out there that are deploying en masse mobile devices in exchange for having the laptop. So as a cost reduction and sort of an infrastructure management savings, they're going to the mobile devices. They have to provide them all with cell phones anyway. So this way they get them better cell phones, they can do all the things they needed to do on a laptop while they're in their mobile role, which might be, you know, mobile Salesforce or something like that.
Or repair people or what have you that need to be mobile, need to be able to access information, need to be able to call back, but they don't need to run Word.
And they need it on ruggedized devices even, not necessarily just the fancy pretty ones, but the ones that can be, you know, bounced on the tarmac out in the airports or something like that if they need to.
But I don't see the ability right now for us to get rid of one or the other device. We still have to have our laptops because they have the capabilities that some of the mobile devices don't have. And we still need our mobile devices because they're portable and they're easy to use and easy to access. And I think that what needs to happen in order for us to consider, you know, decided on one single device, that the mobile devices have to become more advanced, networks have to become more capable, definitely faster, and the laptop devices need to get smaller. So at the end of the day, that looks like a smaller device that can do a heck of a lot more than either one can do on its own today.
So what about as a viable business tool beyond email, which of course has viability? Is the mobile device a place where you can consume your intelligence information? Is it something now where, you know, the time is right to consume this kind of information on a mobile device?
Absolutely. I think with the mobile devices being distributed beyond the executive community, so this limited community, it's a perfect opportunity to start delivering information that someone would have access to on a daily basis at their desk. Not only the folks who have that challenge of having to come in the morning from a remote location or who travel, but just people who need access to information wherever they are. And it might be a cafeteria. It might be on the way to work. It doesn't necessarily have to be from a remote location.
So the applications that are necessary for business decision making can be brought to mobile devices outside of, you know, just purely text in an email, and allowing you to be just as effective and just as time sensitive with your information decision making, but you can do it outside of the building as well as you do it inside.
Yeah, and there are kind of two types of applications. There are new applications that are now being developed because we have so much more capable hardware, and we are taking existing applications and essentially making them available in a mobile-type environment, handling things like online, offline, security, all the additional factors that we have to consider now that we're mobile.
So does that create an increased stress for IT?
My IT friends would say yes.
Security is always, of course, a concern, but I think we're learning more about how to deal with security, but it certainly is a concern for many people.
Yeah, it's a growing reality, too, though. Even if there wasn't a mobile internal strategy in place already, more and more mobile devices are coming into the workforce just through normal prosumer routes, so it's something that has to be faced at some point.
So lots of great technology advancing how we think of our business intelligence information, mobile being a big part of it, and we'll keep track of more trends in technology as we go forward. Thanks, everyone.
Hi, I'm David Axton, president of the Sonax Group and author of the book Best Practices in Planning and Performance Management. Over the next few months, I will be speaking at a Cognos Finance Forum in a city near you. Please join me as I share how the traditional barriers to high performance are being swept away by a new class of finance professional and technology-enabled proven practices. I hope to see you there.
You're listening to BI Radio. Check us out online at radiocognos.com.
Welcome back. Did you know that at this moment, there are about 6 million BlackBerries in use around the world, and a lot of information flying back and forth between them? What if some of that information was BI? Well, it's soon to be a reality. We asked Jim Bosley, the co-CEO of Research in Motion, why there's value in putting performance management in the palm of your hand.
I'm John Blackmore with Cognos. Most people are familiar with the BlackBerry. If they don't own one, they've definitely seen one in use. Jim, give us a sense of scale. How has the wireless message market grown since you introduced the BlackBerry in 1999? How many people have them today?
Well, around 6 million people have BlackBerries, and we have about 80,000 servers installed out in different organizations around the world. So it's definitely grown tremendously, you know, 100% or close to 100% growth every year on a compounded basis. And we see the opportunity growing tremendously. So we're dealing currently with about 170 carriers around the world, 180, I should say, another 130 in backlog. So there's about 300 carriers we're dealing with, close to 100 countries, 80,000 servers going to 100,000. It's a very, very high growth market, very, very exciting market.
BlackBerry users quickly find them indispensable, so I can understand why it grows so quickly. I mean, there's actually a great quote on your website from a journalist who declares, "That's right, I'm in love with your BlackBerry." How do you see business intelligence reports and scorecards on those BlackBerries taking that must-have quality to another level?
Well, I mean, I think it's a natural. Of our 80,000 servers out there, about almost two-thirds use applications beyond email and voice on their BlackBerry. So people have already discovered this capability, and BI is a natural. At the core, what we offer is access. You know, generally, people are fairly satisfied with their applications. We've seen out there, it's much more about an access event-driven relationship, and that's certainly, we've seen that in messaging, where you take a session pull environment like email and make it sessionless push, and you take a couple orders of magnitude out of the latency of collaboration. Well, the same opportunity exists for virtually all time-sensitive corporate applications, and none is greater than BI.
When you talk about access, you have offered that access to business intelligence reports on the BlackBerry before. What's new or different with this Cognos announcement and the business intelligence you're now going to offer to your customers?
Well, you know, definitely Cognos has been very, very aggressive and creative and innovative in the wireless space. Existing BI approaches tend to be more browser-based, and what Cognos is doing, and that's kind of definitely a key start, where you're really pushing it to the next level, is with a richer client experience where you have rich rendering of how you want the data presented, you have very easy drill down, you have online, offline capability with a lot of caching. And so I think, you know, that just makes a much, much richer user experience, you know, and, you know, because it also sets up greater use of the alerting function. So again, you know, when people get business intelligence data, especially dynamic, they're looking for how can I react to this? And so having all kinds of associative data and event-driven data and drill-down capabilities and richer presentation just better supports that decision-making process.
So you can actually manipulate your business intelligence reports using the thumb wheel and other devices on the BlackBerry?
Well, it's remarkable. You can absolutely look at the data. You can get it presented the way you like it. You can drill down dynamically. You can see if one area is performing well and others not, to try to figure out why. You can save up historical data to compare, to have comparables. So much of data is, you know, it becomes information when it's put in a richer context. And so it's about both having the online real-time data, but also giving it all the context that help make it so valuable.
With this, I guess, more dynamic business intelligence that we'll be able to offer on the BlackBerry, what do you think would be some of the killer applications for this type of reporting?
Well, I mean, it's as broad as there are areas of dynamic business intelligence. I mean, clearly, the early, low-hanging fruit is sales performance and marketing program performance, where you look at key indicators of how programs are performing and how sales regions or products or people are performing, and you can drill down and get comparables and get contextualized on that to really see if there's a problem or see if there's a bigger opportunity. But also, there's all other kinds of business intelligence where it's very dynamic, very real-time, operations, metrics for services, production performance and uptime, facilities in the field and capacity and response times. You know, really anything that has a dynamic operating performance element to it just lends itself so naturally to extending that information to an event-driven wireless push architecture.
Jim, when you talk about the BlackBerry, a word you always come back to is access. You know, it's people-to-people communication anywhere in any way. How do you see this new element, the business reaching out and communicating with you in its language of reports and metrics, changing the BlackBerry market and, by extension, even business itself?
Well, it's pretty important because, you know, most studies on efficiency will tell you that the overwhelming opportunity for greater business efficiency is in the management area. And so, you know, that's the area where you can really have a dynamic of new productivity, of much greater productivity. And it's fundamentally about information and decisions and responsiveness. So it's an overwhelming opportunity to really make organizations much more online, much more real-time, much more responsive. The reality of business today is people are mobile. They're not sitting at their desk for 8 or 9 hours a day. They're in meetings. They're on-site. They're off-site. They're traveling. And teams collaborate much more and synthesize all kinds of new information and dynamics. So how does a company get information, disseminate information, and collaborate? It's really by having some form of online collaboration and information alerting and sharing architectures, and definitely an integrated BI system plays naturally in unlocking that competitive advantage and productivity.
Jim, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and thanks for your insights on this new world of business intelligence and mobile communications.
The pleasure's all mine.
Are you a performance manager? Learn how to be one with The Performance Manager, the latest business book from Cognos, PMSI, and BI International. The Performance Manager explores the key challenges in core business functions, sales, marketing, finance, product development, and HR, and describes proven ways you can improve performance in each using sweet spots of information. Become a Performance Manager today. Order your free copy of the book online at www.cognos.com/pmbook. That's cognos.com/pmbook.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of BI Radio. I'd like to thank our guests, Patrick Lencioni and Jim Bossoli, and our technology soup panel of Don Campbell, Anastasia Valentine, Stefan Zhu, and Andrew Kell. Thanks as well to contributing producers John Blackmore and Kelsey Howarth. And finally, I'd like to thank our producer and recording engineer, Derek Schrainer, for composing all the original music you hear on BI Radio and for making us sound so good. A reminder to check us out at radiocognos.com, where you can download any of our programs, read the transcripts, and find additional information about the stories you've heard on our show. If you have a question or care to comment about BI Radio, send us an email at radio@cognos.com. I'm Ken Seeley. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again in 6 weeks.